This is the Sue Free Show, talking about life, relationships, and achieving.
Do you wonder why you have to feel the things that hurt you? If there's a God who loves you, where is he now? Would you dare to believe that you still have a reason to sing? Cause the pain that you've been feeling, it can't compare to the joy that's coming. So hold on, you gotta wait for the light. Press on and just fight the good fight. Cause the pain that you've been feeling, it's just the dark before the morning.
Here's your host, Sue Freeze.
This is our first time together in the new year, and it's so exciting to be here. And it's a time to reflect on last year. What happened last year? The good, the bad. What would you do different? Do you have anything that you would have done different? I bet you do. I know I do. But I also know that that just gives us opportunity to move forward and to think about those things and say, okay, what can I do different this year? You're listening to The Sue Freeze Show at 99.5 KKLA, the intersection of faith and reason. And we are going to ask you to call in today. The message or the topic for today is reconciliation. I usually go through this long thing about what my show is about. And today the show is going to be about reconciliation. So get your pen ready and write down this phone number. It's 888-995-5552. And again, the number is 888-995-5552. You also, if you're in your car and you have to get out of your car, you don't have to turn me off or the show off, because this is going to be a good show and you want to tune in for the whole entire hour. What you can do is you can go inside and you can turn on your computer and you can put in KKLA 99.5, click on that, and you can stream us. And it says Listen Live on the top. Just click on Listen Live and you'll be on with us again. Phone number again, 888-995-5552. So let me ask you, if you're at a party or you're somewhere and someone asked you this question, who are you? What would you say? Think about that for a second. Who are you? What would you say? I know when I go to parties, a lot of times people say, so what do you do? And I say, let's not talk about what we do. Let's talk about who we are. What do you believe? Do you have a purpose? Do you know what your purpose is? It's time to think about these things, because you know what? Life is short. Life is very short. And we've got to make every minute here on this earth count. So how do we do that? We have to have a mission. We have to know what our purpose is. And we need to be working towards that purpose. We are a summation of what we have personally experienced, our values, our morals, what we've been taught, our beliefs, our understandings, and our choices to respond or react or not to do anything at all. So my question to you today is to reflect, and what are you going to do different this year? Today we have a special guest with us. His name is David Trotter, and he's an author of two books. He's passionate about helping people awaken to the rich, meaningful life that is available to everyone. With over 10 years of experience as a pastor, he now speaks and writes on the topics of recovering from an affair and relaunching your life. He is also the principal of 8-Track Studios, consulting businesses in the areas of brand development and marketing communications. That's close to my heart. He has been married to his wife, Laura, for 16 years, and they have two children, Waverly and Emerson. And I bet they're listening right now. He has quite an education. I'm not going to go into that. And he has books that he's written. And I've skimmed through and read the two books, not in complete form, but skimming over just so I had an idea of the topics. And man, they're full of information, and I'm so excited to have him today. So welcome, David, for being on the show.
Thanks, Sue. It's great to be with you.
And he's really with me. A lot of the times people call in, and there's just something lost, not having eye-to-eye contact. And we were sitting here for a minute, and he goes, can we get rid of these monitors? Because I really just want to see your face so we can connect. And I'm like, okay. So we're actually looking at each other, and we're just right across from each other, and we welcome you to call in and be part of this conversation too. It's going to be full of heart, full of emotion, because we're talking about emotional things. We're talking, it's emotionally charged. I'm going to give you a little bit of past of what's happened in this last week is that my father-in-law passed away. And in that, I've watched the family and how they're dealing with this. And, you know, when there is a death in the family or someone that we know that dies, we go inwardly and think about ourselves, but also we look at the loss, we feel the loss, but we also have some remorse or regret sometimes on, could we have treated that person better? Could we have done something different to make the relationship better? And if that's a question that right now you have somebody that's living and you feel that you haven't treated that person the way that person should be treated, or you feel that you could do something different, I'm going to challenge you right now to make that change, to make a decision today, right here, right now, to change the way you're treating that person and take the time to say good things, to celebrate life. It's good to celebrate death, but it's good to celebrate life. And that's what we're talking about right now, is to make your life and those that you have around you the best they can be. So, David, let's start with the first book. The first book has to do with an affair that you had. And you're okay talking about that because...
Well, I'm okay talking about it. One, because a lot of people knew about it. It was very public in the way that it came out. And number two, as I have relaunched my life over the last 3 years, I've had the opportunity to come alongside quite a few guys and gals who are either in an affair or thinking about an affair or getting out of an affair. And the opportunity to share my story is a total privilege. And that's really the reason why I wrote the book, was I wanted to be able to share my story in a very raw way where it's not me telling you that you shouldn't have an affair. It's not me telling you how to even get out of an affair. It's merely just telling my story.
And I know that that's helped quite a few people, knowing that there is another way to go about it. And it's amazing because people reach a certain level, or they might not even know where they are in their personal life, but somehow there's this, for instance, marriages that are roommates. I read that in your book. You talked about that the marriage seemed to be more of a roommate situation than a connected, true relationship. So you talk a little bit about that. Talk about how you were married for how many years, and then it became to where you felt stuck. Is that right?
Absolutely. My wife and I met in college. We both attended Vanguard University, and it was actually called Southern California College at the time, and we met there. She was a sophomore. She was a junior. I was a sophomore, and we dated for about 3 weeks, and I told her I loved her and was going to marry her.
3 weeks.
And she was not real excited about that concept, but we actually were engaged 3 months later.
Wow.
And we
Quick.
Spent a year going through premarital counseling, and we got married after her senior year, after my junior year. And we had a good life. I ended up moving into ministry and was involved in that and spent probably 70 to 80 hours a week just serving in a local church. And then we ended up in 2003 starting a church in the Long Beach area. And she began to take on her role as a kindergarten teacher and as a mom to our two kids. And I took on my role as a pastor. And we really were running in parallel lives. And it began to feel more like we were roommates than anything else. So I felt stuck. Mm-hmm. I felt stuck in a career or a vocation that, although I had loved it, I was seeking success and the accolades and the rush, the adrenaline rush from it. And it was starting to wane. And in thinking about my marriage, it felt like we were roommates more than anything else.
So when someone comes to you and you sense, or they've been honest enough to tell you that, wow, you're talking right up my alley, you're hitting home, do you know my private life, what do you say to those? Is it men usually that come to you, or both?
It's actually been both. I mean, it's primarily men, just because I am a man.
Uh-huh.
And but, you know, most people, I shouldn't say most people, I think a lot of our culture thinks that it's primarily a male issue to seek to have an affair. But really, statistics show that it's across the board. So yeah, they come to me.
So you weren't completely happy in your marriage. You weren't happy. That word bothers me. But you know what I'm saying? There was lacking. There was something lacking. Did you talk to your wife about what was lacking? Were you aware of what was lacking?
Well, I think I was trying to find what was lacking in my role as a pastor. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted a life of adventure and success and excitement and adrenaline, and I wanted a partner to be with me in that adventure. And as my first mistress, so to speak, which was the church, mm-hmm. wasn't continuing to whisper words of affirmation and mm-hmm. wasn't giving me that sense of adventure mm-hmm. that she had in the first 10 years, I began to then take a look at my marriage and go, man, I'm not getting that there either. And it's not as though I went to my wife and said, hey, you're not a very adventurous person. I really would like you to step up and be more adventurous. You're not going to do that as a husband. You know, so I began to just feel the weight of the stuckness. And even though if somebody else had come to me in the same situation, I would have been able to give them a 5-point plan of here's how, let's begin to move in this direction.
Sure.
But because it was me,
right?
I felt so stuck in my own circumstances.
How long did you feel stuck? How long was this going on before you actually took action?
You know, it was probably early to mid 2007. And I began to talk to my leadership team at the church in mid to late 2007 and just said, guys, I feel pretty stuck here. I feel overwhelmed. I'm ready to pull the plug. But when you're the guy who is casting vision, we already had 3 locations, one in Long Beach, Lakewood, and Downey, and we had staff members and growing congregation. I felt like I couldn't back out or pull the plug or make a decision. So it was going on for probably 6 to 9 months, that feeling of just total stuckness.
So you felt totally stuck. Did your wife know or feel that you were stuck? Did she know that you were unhappy?
You know, I think my wife probably knew that I was unhappy a lot of our marriage.
Okay.
As we have debriefed this over the last 3 years, you know, she said, I'm not sure I ever saw you happy. After we got married, I'm not sure I ever saw you in a place where you were just enjoying life. And I think she was right. Yeah, I don't think I was really enjoying just the days of life like I am now.
And people that saw you, when they saw you at church and doing your function as pastor, would they say that they could see that you two were not connected the way you would have liked?
In terms of my wife and I?
Yes.
I don't think people really noticed that. Yeah, I mean, we were kind of model couple. We didn't fight hardly at all. Mm-hmm. And I think people would probably notice, wow, Dave's gone a lot from home. He's at a lot of meetings. He's really driven. Mm-hmm. You know, as a type A driven leader who's out in front leading the charge, starting new locations, people are noticing, wow, he may not be enjoying this moment, mm-hmm. but he's definitely passionate about leading in the moment.
This is the Sue Free Show, and if you'd like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 888-995-5552, stations 99.5 KKLA, 888-995-5552. We're talking to David Trotter, and we're talking about reconciliation. And he had an affair. He was married for, what, 10 years?
It was 14 years.
14 years at that time. And then a mistress came in, and you were gone for 40 days. Is that what happened, or it took 40 days for you to get back to trying to get back with your wife?
Yeah, what happened was in late February, I actually resigned from my roles at the church, and on the same day began a physical connection with this other woman. We had been connecting for about 2 weeks mm-hmm. prior to that. So it was only a 2-week long connection. And at that point, I moved out of my home, moved into an apartment with this gal, and we started a new life together. She actually was my wife's very close friend, and it just caused a great deal of upheaval, obviously, in our church, in our family. My kids were totally distraught, confused why Daddy was doing this. The dad who was always there at our bedside praying for us and tucking us in at night is now gone. He lives a mile away around the corner. And we lived together for 40 days. Hmm. And I call it 40 days of heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. It was heaven because it was exciting. It was illicit. It was invigorating. Mm-hmm. I was actually starting to use a lot of the relational principles that I had been teaching others about for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I was now beginning to use them myself. Mm-hmm. No TV in the bedroom, talking, praying together, reading the scriptures together. That'll twist a lot of Christians' heads going, wow, this guy who's a pastor is having an affair, and yet he's praying and reading mm-hmm. the Bible with the woman mm-hmm. he's with. But yet, it wasn't as though I didn't love God. It was just a lot of confusion in the moment.
So what does the life, how did your wife deal with all this? I mean, that's got to be so difficult for her. I mean, devastation. How did you tell her, and, hey, honey, by the way, I'm leaving. And it's her best friend, so that's betrayal. And
you should have her
oh,
here,
my goodness.
Sue.
Okay, another show. Another show. We're going to have your wife on.
Yeah.
Because that's devastating. Totally devastating.
Actually, what happened was I was on a humanitarian trip with a group of 17 people from our church in India. I came home, and the night that I walked in the door, we sat down on the bed, and I said, Laura, it's too much. I said, I'm sick of our marriage. I'm sick of ministry, and I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I cannot do it. And she said, is our marriage over? I said, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just sick of what life is right now, and I just can't deal with it. I need a 30-day sabbatical. I need to go back to counseling. I need to get some help and get my head cleared away. Mm-hmm. And so over the next 2 weeks, I had resigned, started going to counseling, and I really could not even look my wife in the face. It was an absolute disaster in our home for 2 weeks. Because meanwhile, I began to connect with this gal over the phone, and then ultimately in person. And then we ultimately began to talk about what it would look like for us to spend our life together. And I had several friends walking with me through this process. They were reminding me about the devastation that this would lead to. But when I'll personalize this and say I, but I know because I've worked with so many people, and I could easily say you, but when I was in a place of desperation and thought that another human being could provide me with the nourishment and the satisfaction that I longed for so deep down, when I'm in that place of delusion, nobody can use any scripture, any sense of logic to talk me out of that. In that moment, it's like, this is what I want to do. I don't care what you're saying. I've been the responsible, practical person my whole life who's been kind of the good church kid, and now I just want to do whatever I want to do. That's going to fill me up in this moment.
So when people come to you now and they say, you know, the fire has gone out of my marriage, I just don't feel like I used to feel, I can't make myself feel something that's not there, I can't make it happen. You know, there needs to be this intimacy that I can't seem to force. It's a forced thing, and I can't even force myself to get there. What would you say to those people that are listening?
First of all, I'd say I've been there. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to be laying next to a spouse and not have feelings for them, and actually have the most intense feelings of my entire life for somebody else. Mm-hmm. I know what that's like. And I also know that I thought it was my wife's responsibility to step up to the plate and be the partner that I longed for her to be. And what I realized through this entire horrendous process that I've been through is that if I want a certain type of marriage, it's up to me to develop my part of the partnership first. I can't be waiting and relying upon my wife to be the adventurous, beautiful, spiritual partner that I want. I need to be that person. If I want our marriage to have adventure, I need to bring adventure to the table. If I want our relationship to be spiritual and intimate, I need to bring that to the table. And that's what I find that most people who are heading toward an affair don't even realize. They think, well, if my spouse would just change and be the most amazing spouse that I could possibly have, then I'd be happy.
What about those people that say, I've communicated and I've let my spouse know what my needs are? For instance, something that came to you was affirmation. You need those words of, you're so special, you're so wonderful. The five love languages comes to mind right now, as you know, everybody has their own love language. And you said affirmation. So I would assume, I'm assuming, that words are very important to you. knowing that you're so special, you're so wonderful, I'm so glad I married you. Those types of words are important to you. So if you went to your spouse or someone listening goes to their spouse and says, I really need this from you, okay, even though we need to be all we can be, get that. But if you go to your spouse and you say, these are the things that I need from you, and that person chooses not to do that, what would you say to those people?
Right. Well, the first
thing
is...
That's a tough one.
It is, and you can't change that other person.
No, you can't.
The only person you can change is yourself.
You. Right.
And good luck even changing yourself. It's pretty difficult.
It is, isn't it?
So, you know, a great mentor of mine instilled in this in me early on in ministry, and he said, the only thing you can do is model, share, and encourage. You can model the type of life that you want others to live. Model it in your own life. If you want an affirmation-filled marriage, then you bring affirmation to the table. Then the second is share, that you can share your desire for affirmation. And the third is to encourage, that when you see even the smallest inkling of your spouse affirming you or thanking you, point it out, encourage them, cheer them on, let them know how
important
special that,
that
was. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, we both know, Sue, that it requires two people giving 100% in order to make a marriage work, especially in a situation like mine when I had brought so much devastation to our relationship.
Yeah, that had to be only a God. It's a God thing because only God can reconcile something that's hurting so bad. I would like to talk to your wife about how this was for her. When we come back with more of the Sue Freeze Show and David Trotter on 99.5, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about his other book, which is Moving On, Moving Past This, what we've discussed the first half hour. And it's about, do you have the life you've always wanted? Are you living your life passions with meaning and purpose? Are your relationships rich and meaningful? Do you even know who you are and what you bring to this world? You need to launch yourself. That's on the back of his book, and I just loved that. And that's what we're going to look forward to on the second half of the Sue Freeze Show on 99.5 KKLA.
What would happen if your computer network went down? It happens every day to businesses large and small. Imagine losing financial records, days of work, or even your entire client database. How damaging would that be? Imagine how different your life would be if you could find out about a computer disaster before it happened. With NSI's free network analysis, you'll get a technical specialist who will not only warn you about any possible threats or system issues, but you'll also get a full inventory of your systems along with a site performance evaluation. And at the conclusion of your analysis, we will sit down with you to explain exactly what we have discovered in terms that make sense. This valuable offer is available for a limited time to all business owners. Wouldn't you like to have peace of mind that your technology is stable and secure? Find out why hundreds of companies, like yours, choose NSI as their technology partner. Don't rely on luck. Let NSI help. To schedule your free analysis and see how NSI can help your business strengthen its technological base, call 866-671-0089, extension 204. That's 866-671-0089, extension 204. Call today and find out what it's like to have a true technology partner working for your business. Call 866-671-0089, extension 204.
They're called the stealth bugs of the insect world, termites, every homeowner's nightmare. But a lot of KKLA listeners don't lose a moment of sleep over termites because of Ecola Termite and Pest Control. They are California's leading ecological alternative termite control company. You see, Ecola gets rid of termites by using family-friendly, poison-free alternatives like Electrogun that seeks out and eliminates the little rascals, microwave process for small areas, and their new Ecola Heat using clean, hot air for entire walls. No embarrassing circus tent over your home. No poison gas, no bagging your food, or moving out for a couple of days. Ecola Termite and Pest Control gets rid of termites effectively and quickly. So call Ecola at 800-332-BUGS. 800-332-BUGS. Ecola. Powerful termite and pest control as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their 2-year warranty. Call 800-332-BUGS. This is the Sue Freeze Show.
So we're back with David Trotter, and we were talking about reconciliation. And when we went off, we said we were going to go to his next book and his next topic, which is relaunching. But before doing that, he had requested that we kind of close this story with the reconciliation of his wife. So what steps did you take in the process of reconciling with your wife and family?
Sue, when this other gal who I was with left 40 days after we began living together, she went back to her family. And at the time, I was devastated and upset and angry. And now looking back, I'm, of course, thankful that she made that decision. But it was devastating. I mean, I could not function. There were three friends and a therapist who were willing to walk with me through that process. And after a couple days of fighting for my life, I ended up checking myself into a hospital, Laguna Beach Medical Center, into a psych ward, and just got some medical care and got some space to begin to process what had happened and where I was at. I had thrown away a 10-year-long vocation, 14-year-long marriage, relationship with my kids. It was just a mess. I ended up moving out, and for two more weeks, I spent every day and night wrestling with my the repercussions of my decisions and even suicide for two more weeks. And it was May 3rd, 2008. And I really felt like that was a day where I came to my senses, and I called a friend and I said, man, I feel like I've got three options today. I feel like today's the day that I'm going to just kill myself. And I was just weeping as I'm calling, talking to him. Second is, maybe I'll just suck it up and maybe a woman will love me someday. Or the third is that I'd call Laura and I'd beg her to take me back. I'd beg her to receive forgiveness from me and just apologize. And this guy's a really wise man. He said, man, if you got those three options, let's hold off on option number one. Okay. Let's not kill yourself. All right.
That's good.
I'm like, you know, I'm kind of like laughing and crying and at the same time. And he said, and you know, you really don't want to ask your wife to take you back because you don't even love her. You don't want to be with her, but she does deserve an apology. And it was like this light went on. And I thought to myself, wow, that's brilliant. I hadn't even thought of apologizing to her. Right? You see how delusional I was.
Right.
And
right.
So that was 10 a.m. and I ended up calling her, and we got together 2 hours later and on a park bench. I'm just weeping and apologizing, taking full responsibility for how I had hurt her and our church and our kids. And I didn't ask for her to forgive me on the spot. I didn't ask her to take me back. I didn't even know if I wanted to be with her. I just wanted to give her the apology that she deserved. And we began to slowly connect and talk. And I was continuing to go to counseling. She was going to counseling. And then a couple months later, we ended up starting to go to counseling together. And it was a long process of God's grace, his forgiveness, us processing all of this with a counselor who practically saved our life and our marriage. And in August of 2008, my wife and kids warmly welcomed me back home. Mm. And you got to know, my wife, she is an amazing woman. She has
to be an amazing woman.
And she didn't just say, hey, come on back. She really processed through her own part. Not that she deserved it or caused the affair in any form or fashion, but she took responsibility for her part in our marriage. And to see her processing through all of that has just been inspiring for me as well.
So it's a rebirth, a rebuild, a reconnect at a different level, because there was honesty. Now, a trust has to be rebuilt, I'm sure, and that takes time to rebuild the trust. But a lot of rewords in there, you know, with reconciliation. And you still have the regrets of
Absolutely.
Making that decision.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And but, you know, that whole thing is biblical. Remember, I don't remember where it is in the Bible right now, but where it says that when you go to the altar, if there's somebody that you have, you know, something just not right, to leave your offering at the altar, leave the altar, go make it right, then come back and give your offering to the Lord. And that's basically what your wise friend was telling you is, you know, don't ask to be brought, given back, you know, to take you back. Just ask for forgiveness. And that's what you did, is just ask for forgiveness. So you left the altar to go do that.
And I find that I continually have to do that, Sue, just because my life intersected with hundreds of people as a pastor. And I haven't been given the opportunity to go back to the church to apologize. And so I've had to reach out to people either individually or as I come across them and just communicate my remorse, my taking complete responsibility for my actions, and really there's no excuse. There really is no excuse at all. And my only response is just a daily life of repentance, mm-hmm. of living a life with loving my family, loving my kids, having a great marriage, serving other people. It's the only life that I can live now.
How old were your kids when this happened?
My kids were 5 and 9.
Do you think they knew what was going on? You said they did, kind of. Because Dad wasn't there to pray and tuck him in.
Right. My 5-year-old was more confused, like, mm-hmm. where is Dad? Mm-hmm. My 9-year-old definitely knew all that was going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the devastation in their eyes, and to see them throwing themselves on their bed and crying and weeping and just mm-hmm. not understanding, it just was so heartbreaking for me. I'll never forget the moment when, after I had moved back home, it was in late August, and I told Laura I felt like it was an appropriate time for me to actually apologize to both of our kids. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, rather than having a family meeting, just as we were tucking them into bed, it was just an appropriate, heartfelt moment. And I did that with my son, and he kind of was like, yeah, okay, great. Thanks, Dad. Love you. Good night. And to look my daughter Waverly in the eyes, and she's laying in bed, and I'm sitting on the foot of her bed, and to take responsibility for her, or for my actions with her, to apologize. And tears are streaming down my face, and my wife is sitting there, and she's crying. And my daughter popped up out of bed with no words spoken and just gives me a huge hug and just embraces me. And
that honest, innocent forgiveness.
It's all she did.
Precious.
I don't think she knew what to say. Mm-hmm. That was her way of being with me in the moment.
She was 9 at the time, so it could be down the road that, you know, there might be a reoccurrence of this thought process of a lack of trust with the man that maybe she's going to marry, or a fear of getting married or whatnot. So it might come up again, and so you're going to have to address it again with her. But you're sensitive to that, I'm sure. This is the Sue Freeze Show, and if you'd like to join in, it's 888-995-5552. We're talking to David Trotter right now, and we're going to move into relaunching our lives, because all of us have been through things in our lives. And like I said in the first half, is looking at someone who is getting to the end of their lives, and those that are left behind. It's always best if we can take care of those things before it gets to that point, because you know what? Sometimes people die unexpectedly, and we don't know when that's going to be. It could be you. It could be your friend or your parent, anybody. And you're not going to know when that time comes. Some of us are lucky enough to have a little pre-notice and be able to make that time to make things right. But some of us won't have that opportunity. So I just challenge you all to, if there's something unsaid, if there's a pain or a hurt that you have or that you have done to someone else, try to make that right and do it now. Don't wait. Make it right. Let's start this year out with a fresh plate, a fresh slate, and let's move forward in a freeing place to where we can be all we can be for God. So, David, how did you go about relaunching your life as you were in the process of reconciling?
Well, the first thing that I was just very blessed with were these several friends and a therapist to walk with me. Mm-hmm. And these are all guys who are followers of Jesus, who love God, and they've been involved in a lot of ministry. And so they didn't judge me. They didn't.
It's huge.
They didn't continually remind me of what I had done was wrong. Mm-hmm. I already knew what I was doing and what I had done was wrong. Nobody needed to tell me. Mm-hmm. They were there to pick me up mm-hmm. and hold me close, and continually ask me tough questions that led to health. Because I had been so driven and focused on success, one of the things that I had to rewire was to say, what is life all about? What's important in this life? And for me, achievements and success and taking the next hill had been what was important. And now I was reframing that life was more about relationships. And so through a lot of therapy, that was very helpful. A gentleman named Randy Powell, actually with Journeys Counseling Ministry, is incredibly helpful in my life. And then I ended up also getting a brain scan with the Amen mm-hmm. Clinic in Newport Beach to determine activity level in my brain. They found that my basal ganglia, which actually controls fight or flight, was way overactive. And so through the help of a Christian therapist, got me on some medication to help me with that anxiety. And through spiritual counseling and marriage counseling, all of these things were tools and ways that were beginning to reform what life was all about. Really, what I started out with, the main question, and you alluded to this earlier, was the question of who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had been a pastor for 10 years, and I had always been the kid growing up who was achievement-oriented, mm-hmm. getting A's, excelling in school. And I started to reframe that and just go, man, who am I? Like, what is my wiring, my DNA, and how does that construct actually how I think about life and how I live on a daily basis? So in this book, Launch Yourself, I talk about that one of the main aspects of my identity is my divine imprint. And some people call that your identity in Christ, or the fact that we've actually separately, it's a separate theological issue, that we're made in the image of God. But that divine imprint, the fact that I'm specially created by God, that I have a divine purpose, that I'm a friend of God, that I have extraordinary gifts and talents, all of those are part of who I am.
That's correct. And that's all of everybody. Everybody has those things. Keep going. I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
You. But
absolutely.
It's true. All of us have that. All of us have a divine purpose. We were created for a specific purpose. I always told my kids that when they were growing up, and I still tell them that. I'm so excited to see what God's going to do in your life because I know He created you. And I want to see that fulfilled in everyone's lives. And we're called to help people and encourage people. What you said about these friends and therapists that were alongside of you and didn't judge you, they loved you unconditionally.
Absolutely.
Oh, how wonderful is that?
It was a huge gift.
Huge.
Huge gift. Part of the whole process of thinking through my identity was thinking that it was more based in who I was than what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been so focused on the activities or achievements of life that I'd really forgotten about that inner world of who I was in God's eyes, the gifts and talents that God had given me, my unique wiring and my personality, and then even the story of my life. Because those are the four key components that make up my identity as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take away my role as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I still am a shepherd of people. I love people. Amen. I want to see them built up and have a rich, meaningful life. Just because I don't have that job title or because I'm not paid for it doesn't take away who I am.
Definitely not.
And so I began to embrace more of my identity. That was the first step.
That's a big one for all of us.
It is.
We have to figure out who we are. And then the next one that you have in the book is, what do I want?
What do I want out of life?
Right.
I don't think that most people ask that first question, who am I? I think we get into a job out of college or out of high school, and we just start to work this 9-to-5, 8-to-5 life, or 8-to-8, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to pay the bills. We buy a house. We have kids. We try to get a nicer car, maybe a boat, if we're really, you know, whatever it is, whatever you want to have in this life. And we forget to ask, who am I? And what do I really want in this life? Well, for me, that question leads to a mental picture of my preferable future.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a preferable future, a future that I prefer, that I really love to experience, and I need to have a mental picture of that. A snapshot in time that I can not only see, but I can smell it, I can feel it, I can taste it. It's a moment in time that just encapsulates what I want to experience in life. If I'm not experiencing that now or moving toward it, then I'm stuck. I'm not moving toward the life that I truly long for. And I think most people are stuck. We've become satisfied, not in a positive way of satisfaction, but in a negative way of stuckness, where we're not really experiencing the type of relationships, friendships, spirituality, money and finances, physical health. We're not experiencing what we really want in those areas of life, and we kind of just settle for what we call normal, and we stay there. And I don't want that kind of life. I did that for many years. I want a life that's full of richness and meaningfulness, full of purpose, and that means I've got to be intentional about thinking about what I really want. I've got to ask myself the question.
The word you used was intentional. I went to a marriage counseling class that my daughter was attending, and she asked for me to attend it. And what came out of that was that marriage is a mission. And I had never thought of that before, because you have two people that need to be going in the same direction. Because if you're going opposites or you're going different directions, then it's really not going to work. It's kind of like when you vote. If the husband and wife don't vote alike, you're just, you know, you might as well not vote. Yeah. So it's kind of that, is that you have to figure out what it is and be intentional about what you're doing. And then your life has purpose, because right. you have a goal. I don't know. Not everybody is goal-oriented.
Right.
I happen to be goal-oriented. And when I looked at my father-in-law and I saw that he was ending his life, he didn't end his life, but when his life was ending, when it was getting to the end, I realized that, you know, the purpose or the goal of our lives is, I thought about me personally, because I think we do that. We internalize, and I was thinking, what would I want people to say about me? You know, if I could oversee people above me, looking down, what would they say about me? And would it be what I would want them to say? I don't know. Does anybody else think like that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's thinking about the end in mind.
Yeah, the goal is like what you do. When you're going for a goal, you have the goal and the end in mind, and then you work backwards, right? So what you're saying is to do that, to be intentional, to have, what is your life? I've also said or read that people say, you know, if money was no option and you could do whatever you wanted in this world, what would it be? And if you can find what God created, the passion that you have inside of you, because it's your gift, and if you can work within your gift and in your passion and get paid for it, what a wonderful life that could be.
Right.
Right?
And both of those questions, whether it's what do you want people to say about you at the end of your life, or if you had unlimited money, what would you do? Both of those questions are driving at the same point, which is, how can you live an intentional life?
Mm-hmm.
A life of intentionality where you're not just stuck in a groove or a rut and working 9 to 5, trying to just make it in life, but actually living with intention. Not just intention. I think a lot of us get intentional about one area of our life. For guys, it's oftentimes our vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And we drive hard in that area, but at the expense of our marriage, relationship with kids, spirituality, even physical health,
mm-hmm.
right? It's, what does it look like to be intentional about our whole lives?
In here, I've opened up to a page, and it says, if you're wondering how and when to do this when you're figuring out what you want, you have, number one, set aside specific time to reflect. We talked about reflecting. It's a new year. It's time to reflect. And then you have, ask God to give you direction, is number two. Three, make your own old life, new life list. That's
yes.
So good.
When I was in the hospital, I kept asking my friends for those giant sheets of paper that you have in like a
so
conference
great.
Boardroom.
Uh-huh.
They finally brought it to me. I taped it up on the wall, and I drew a line down the center.
Mm-hmm.
And on the left, I wrote old life. On the top right, I wrote new life. And I listed all the things on the left that I didn't want that were a part of my old life, things that I wasn't satisfied with. And then all the things that corresponded on the right that I truly wanted in life.
Then you have, what truths will keep me focused?
Yes.
Okay, is that where you're talking about lies?
Exactly.
Right. Oh, this is good.
The whole idea behind launch yourself, one, who am I? That's the launch pad of your life. If you're going to have a great life where you're relaunching, getting out of being stuck, got to have a strong launch pad. That's your foundation. That's your identity. Second question is, what do I want? That's a mental picture of your preferable future, where you're going. Third question is, what are the truths that will keep you focused? And that's what keeps you aligned with where you're headed. What I talk about is that there's a difference between believing lies
mm-hmm.
in our heads
mm-hmm.
and hearts and believing the truth. In the book, I talk about those being those dark voices
right.
that speak to us.
Right.
And those lies, you know, for me, the two lies that I've battled for most of my life is that, number one, I'll never be good enough. And number two, that people don't love me or want to be with me.
Mm.
And so if I believe that I'm never going to be good enough, it results in me working harder and harder and harder and harder to try to prove.
But you're never going
to
be good enough.
It's a never-ending cycle. It's a black hole.
Uh-huh.
And then if people don't love me or want to be with me, if I meet you, I automatically think, Sue's not going to like me. She's going to think I'm weird or obnoxious or too straightforward. I set myself up to lose.
Guess what? I like you.
Awesome. Thank you.
I like you a lot.
But you know what's funny is, even though you say that.
You don't believe it?
It goes.
You didn't believe it, but you believe it now.
Oh, I'm trying to. Right? But it goes in that black hole.
Right.
So I have to believe the truth about who I am, Now, what I say is that the lie always leads toward death,
mm-hmm.
and the truth always leads toward life.
Yes.
Right? So from a Christian perspective, the truth that we want to rely on is based on these ancient scriptures that we have in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth, the lie is I will never be enough. The truth is that God created me. I'm a whole individual, and I'm good enough just the way I am because of his grace and mercy. The lie is that people don't love me or like me. Well, you know what the truth is? My parents, they love me, even though they might have not done a perfect job.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends and family love me, even though they may not be able to express it the way that I would like to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm loved. I'm loved by God. So once you identify the truth, then my good friend Roger Chiribasi, he says, you got to step into the courtroom of your mind, and these dark voices are going to bring their own evidence. You got to bring your own briefcase of evidence. So I'm just going to put in my briefcase of evidence, Sue, another piece of evidence that Sue Freeze likes me.
Okay.
All right. So anytime I feel like somebody doesn't like me, I can open up my briefcase and I've got all these other experiences of people that love me and like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just added more evidence that Sue likes me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the final step is to actually envision that there's going to be a positive outcome in whatever circumstance I'm involved in.
That's really good. Really good.
How about you? What are some lies? I'm going to turn the table on you, right? What are some lies that you are prone to believe on a daily basis?
Well, my father, God rest his soul, but my father used to say, you're like a bull in a china closet.
Mm.
That's something. And I'm a dancer now, okay? And I don't think I'm klutzy, but he used to say, you're like a bull in a china closet. And another one was had to do with my eating habits. So I was very, very thin as a child because I never wanted to eat at the table because my dad was always ridiculing me at the table about how I ate.
Mm.
So I've already been healed of all of that, and mm-hmm. now I know I'm not a bull in a china closet. And I know that I have good eating habits because I read the book and I've studied. So I know that I can eat with manners and that I don't have a problem there. And I'm not as skinny as I used to be, darn it. But anyway, that's beside the point. But you know, never being good enough, I think that I have a part of that that whispers in there. But I do rebuke that. You know, people will speak into your lives both positively and negatively.
Right.
And we have a choice on whether we're going to receive it or not. And there are people close to me that say things. And I just say, I rebuke that in Jesus' name, because that is, I'm not receiving that. Now, also, if loving people tell you things that might be true and they're hard to hear, we need to receive that. We need to evaluate it, look at the person in the mirror, and say, okay, there's some truth to that. I'm going to work on that because I want to be better today than I was yesterday. And I think we all should be working towards a better person because
right.
that's what God calls us to do. He wants all of us, and he wants us to love him, but he also wants us to be all he created us to be. So if there's negative in us, we need to be, it needs to be brought out. And you can always find someone to give you what you want to hear, but you can't, you know, you want people around you that are going to tell you what you need to hear,
mm-hmm.
right?
But this lie also, it's... Even though somebody might point out something that's negative or a fault in our life, that can be communicated in a way that actually brings life, not death. Where a lie, I have found, always brings death. It always sucks the life out of us, whatever situation we're in.
Those little voices sometimes we hear. Like I've heard my employees sometimes I'll say, oh, I'm so stupid. And I say, you're not stupid. In Jesus' name, you're not stupid. You know, you might have made a mistake. We all do. But that doesn't make you stupid. So don't say that anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, when I hear mothers in the store say, you're such a brat. And I'm like, they're a blessing from heaven. They're not a brat.
Yes.
You don't deserve to have them if you're going to call them a brat.
Right.
Give them to me. I'll take care of them.
Some of my behavior may have been unwise.
Right.
But my identity is rooted in the truth that
Correct.
God has created me as a smart individual.
Right. So we're getting close. We're getting close to our close. And so people that are listening, I know there's people listening. So what would you want to say to them about relaunching their lives? Plus, you need to give a commercial and you know, we need to go there too. So you have like, I think, 3 minutes. So,
okay.
David, it's yours.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you're feeling stuck in life, you know, you don't have to hit rock bottom in order to make major change in your life. Whether you're feeling mildly stuck or really struggling in whether your marriage or your vocation, your health, whatever it might be, I just want to encourage you to get intentional. And you can choose that today is actually the day that you take an intentional step toward health. So if you need somebody to walk with you, reach out, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. A lot of us feel like, man, I don't want to burden somebody else, or somebody's not going to understand my situation. Turn to someone who is trustworthy, who you have seen be vulnerable in their own life. If you've seen someone else be honest about their shortcomings, that's a person that you can turn to and look for wisdom. They may not be able to, they're not going to be able to turn the situation around, but they'll be able to walk with you. So God has a plan for your life. You're not stuck. You're not going to be stuck in this place wherever you are for the rest of your life. You can turn to God, look to get intentional, and get some help from the other people around you. Tomorrow's a new day, and tomorrow can be different than today if you're willing to be intentional and reach out for help.
There's real hope in that, just what you just said, you know, because I have family members that have been in the same rut for a long time, one in particular that I know she's listening. And I just would love to see, it would just bless my heart beyond belief to have her, you know, change and be intentional and make a change in her life for the positive. So listen, I'm going to do a commercial because we're running out of time. David Trotter has Launch Yourself Workshops scheduled for Orange County, January 21st, 22nd. Birmingham, February 18th through 19th, New York City, February 25th through the 26th, and Denver, March 4th through 5th. There's more info and registration, www.launch52.com. What's 52 for?
52 weeks in the year. If you can envision what your life would be like 52 weeks from now, see? You can begin to get intention.
I was curious about the 52. Anyway, so David, I have loved having you on here, and I'd love to have you back. I'd love to have your wife on the show. Do you think she'd come?
I totally, absolutely, she would.
I think that would be great. We have SueFriesTV.com. You can go on there, and if you missed part of this and you want to hear it, you can do that. I have blog.SueFries. It's spelt like fries. It's one word, SueFries, one word, no space, .com. So you can go on there. You can hear this. If you know somebody else that missed it that you want to share it with, we would love for you to do that. Get connected with the show, Sue Fries Show, and put your information on there so that we can be connected and I can send you little things here and there. And what else, David? We have, 30 seconds.
Well, Sue, I just want to affirm you and say you're a great host. This is my first time listening to you.
Wow.
In person. Yeah, I don't normally listen to you. I'll be honest about that. But I've loved your energy, your excitement. I love your commitment to helping people. That really is what I sense in your heart, is your desire is to use this time to invest in other people. And so I think that is radiating.
Oh, thank you so much. That's encouraging for me to hear that, because, you know, it's not easy to do this. And the hard part about being on the radio is I can't see the audience. You know, right. I don't know who's out there listening. And I pray, and we prayed, that somebody that might need to hear something, just a little gold nugget out of this whole hour, or maybe they're in for 5 minutes, but that 5 minutes changes their lives. That is the biggest blessing of all. And so I'm hoping that happens. And until next week, I look forward to getting with you again. And David, thank you so much for being a part of this. And we're going to have you back on the show for sure. Thank you so much.
Forgiven in love, child, you're forgiven, and child, you are loved. Child, you're forgiven in love.
The Sue Fries Show is sponsored by E. coli Termite and Pest Control Services. It's that time of the year when bugs multiply like crazy and they start looking for a home, your home. Ants, spiders, fleas, earwigs, termites, and a lot of other creepy crawly critters, even rats and other varmints. It's time to call E. coli Termite and Pest Control Services. They offer complete ecological pest control of rodents and insects. Ecola has one-time services, ongoing monthly services, their most popular and economical every other month service, and even quarterly service for occasional pest problems. Ecola keeps rats and mice out and eliminates insects in their nests. It's the most effective way. And their termite control is legendary. So call Ecola today for a free estimate of complete pest and termite control at 800-332-BUGS. 800-332-BUGS. Ecola, powerful termite and pest control services as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their two-year warranty. Call 800-332-BUGS.
Are raising insurance premiums making it unaffordable to offer quality benefits to your employees? Well, before you throw in the towel on providing affordable employee benefits, call Denon Simpson Insurance Services, the benefits specialist. Denon Simpson saved her clients over $4 million in premiums last year while offering extra benefits like heart scans, stroke scans, even chair massages. Let your employees know how much you appreciate them by offering them a comprehensive benefits package that's easy to manage and affordable. Denon Simpson serves companies throughout Southern California. Clients like Make-A-Wish, A American Self-Storage, the Foursquare Denomination, and ministries around the world. They love an opportunity to save your company thousands too, while providing a culture of wellness and safety. If you're responsible for the health and safety of your employees, call Denon Simpson Insurance Services today at 818-676-0044. That's Denon Simpson Insurance Services for a free evaluation. 818-676-0044. Denon Simpson, the benefit specialist.